Okay, well, this is our fourth lesson on Revelation. I really hope it's our last. So we spent the first two weeks really going over things like the theme, author, date, historical background, genre, the problem of prophetic language, interpretation of the millennium, which I'm going to use that to my advantage today is when we get to Revelation chapter 20. I'll probably skip it because I'll almost certainly be out of time by then. And we also noted that this characterization, the sort of post-millennial, amillennial, premillennial characterization is only part of what might explain someone's interpretation of the book. Right, and from the first 19 chapters, there's different ways of interpreting that. Right, and last week I covered chapters 1 to 3, and if you weren't here last week or before that, I'll again say that I'm teaching this from a post-millennial preterist perspective, and that I won't be offended if you're not convinced, or you think another view is correct. A lot of people that I highly respect hold other views, but I'm only in a survey class. I'm just going to try to teach my perspective, and we'll do what we can. So our theme verse for today comes from Psalms 46:8. Come, behold the works of the Lord, who has made desolations in the earth. Right? That's what much of the rest of the book is about, is desolations. So, as I mentioned last time, right, I'm asserting that the prophecy in the book, particularly chapters 4 to 11, are prophecy of the destruction of Jerusalem. I mentioned that, but it's not just a prophecy of the destruction of Jerusalem, but also the definitive end of the old covenant relationship with the Jewish people, or it's those who didn't follow Christ, the definitive cutting off. Right. Another way of thinking, this is sometimes thought of as a divorce decree. Right. Israel in the Old Testament is a number of times portrayed as an adulterous wife. So, like if you look at Hosea chapter 2, let's see. Starting with verse 2, bring charges against your mother, bring charges, for she is not my wife, nor am I her husband. Let her put away her harlotries from her sight, and her adulteries from between her breasts, lest I strip her naked and expose her, as in the day she was born, and make her like a wilderness, and set her like a dry land, and slay her with thirst. I will not have mercy on her children, for they are the children of harlotry. For their mother has played the harlot. She who conceived them has behaved shamefully. For she said, I will go after my lovers who give me my bread and my water, my wool and my linen, my oil and my drink. Therefore, behold, I will hedge up your way with thorns and wall her in, so that she cannot find her paths. But she will chase her lovers, but not overtake them. Yes, she will seek them, but not find them. Then she will say, I will go and return to my first husband, for then it was better than now. Okay. Hosea goes on, and we could spend more time looking at this divorce and adulterous relationship, but we're not studying Hosea today, so we're just going to go on. Ezekiel 6, verses 8 to 10. Yet I will leave a remnant so that you may have some who escape the sword among the nations when you are scattered through the countries. Then those of you who escape will remember me among the nations where they are carried captive, because I was crushed by their adulterous heart which has departed from me. And by their eyes which play the harlot after their idols, they will loathe themselves for the evils which they committed in all their abominations. And they shall know that I am the Lord. I have not said in vain that I would bring this calamity upon them. So again, this image of Israel is being an adulterous wife. Jeremiah 3, just verse 1. They say, if a man divorces his wife and she goes from him and becomes another man's, may he return to her again. Would not that land be greatly polluted? But you have played the harlot with many lovers, yet return to me, says the Lord. So, in this, the image of Revelation as being sort of a divorce decree, right? Then the judgment might be considered the divorce that legally ends a relationship. Right, then in Revelation 19, starting with verse 7, let us be glad and rejoice and give him glory, for the marriage of the Lamb has come, and his wife has made herself ready. And to her it was granted to be arrayed in fine linen, clean and bright, for the fine linen is the righteous acts of the saints. Then he said to me, write, blessed are those who are called to the marriage supper of the Lamb. And he said to me, these are the true sayings of God. So, one way of looking at this cutting off is if it's a divorce decree and then Christ is married to the church. So this will sort of come up later when we get to the latter half of the book. Okay. We're really going to try to fly through the book today. So we'll sort of pick up in Revelation 4, though we're almost immediately going to jump to 6. Okay, so 4 starts with, "After these things I looked, and behold, a door standing open in heaven. And the first voice which I heard was like a trumpet speaking with me, saying, 'Come up here, and I will show you things which must take place after this.' Immediately I was in the Spirit, and behold, a throne set in heaven, and one sat on the throne. And he who sat there was like a jasper and sardius stone in appearance, and there was a rainbow around the throne in appearance like an emerald." Okay, so John is called up into the throne room of heaven, and we could compare that to some other passages like Ezekiel 1. We talked a little bit about that last week, or read quite a bit of Ezekiel 1 last week, so we'll skip there. But he's called up into heaven where he sees a scroll and sealed with 7 seals, and no one worthy to open it, but then the Lamb, the Lion of the tribe of Judah, the Root of David, opens the scroll and looses its 7 seals. Okay, and we then go on to a scene of the 4 living creatures and the 24 elders singing a new song. "You are worthy to take the scroll and to open its seals, for you were slain, and you have redeemed us to God by your blood. Out of every tribe and tongue and people and nation have made us kings and priests to our God, and we shall reign on the earth." And so, a lot of rich material that I'm skipping over, and we'll come now to the chapter 6 through 8. We'll start with verses 1 through 8 of chapter 6, which are the first 4 seals. "Now I saw when the Lamb opened one of the seals, and I heard one of the 4 living creatures saying with a voice like thunder, 'Come and see.' And I looked, and behold, a white horse. He who sat on it had a bow, and a crown was given to him, and he went out conquering and to conquer. When he opened the second seal, I heard the second living creature saying, 'Come and see.' Another horse, fiery red, went out. It was granted to the one who sat on it to take peace from the earth, and that people should kill one another, and there was given to him a great sword. When he opened the third seal, I heard the third living creature say, 'Come and see.' So I looked, and behold, a black horse, and he who sat on it had a pair of scales in his hand. And I heard a voice in the midst of the 4 living creatures saying, 'A quart of wheat for a denarius, and 3 quarts of barley for a denarius, and do not harm the oil and the wine.' When he opened the fourth seal, I heard the voice of the 4th living creature saying, 'Come and see.' So I looked, and behold, a pale horse. And the name of him who sat on it was Death, and Hades followed with him. And power was given to them over a fourth of the earth, to kill with sword, with hunger, with death, and by the beasts of the earth." Okay, so in the first 4 seals, we have a conqueror, conflict, scarcity, and death. Right? Not very pleasant situation to be in. The first seal, the white horse rider, immediately presents us with some problem of interpretation, whether or not it's Christ. Right, so some commentators think that it is Christ. He's riding a white horse as he appears in Revelation 19:11. He has a bow as he's pictured sort of in Habakkuk 3 and Psalm 45. He's wearing a crown. Right? Alternative interpretation is that it's the Roman army entering Israel, headed towards Jerusalem. Okay, ultimately, I'm not sure it makes that much difference. The judgment is coming from the throne of God. He's sovereign over everything in history, right? And he's clearly using the Roman army for his own ends. So, plus, I don't really know the answer anyway, so, you know. So, I don't know. It doesn't make that much difference to me. So you can worry about it yourself. Okay, in the second seal, the fiery red horse, that rider takes peace from the earth. Right? Now, again, I suppose there certainly are many interpretations, but it seems likely it's the outbreak of the Jewish Civil War. Right, I mentioned this, I think last time, that there was a Jewish Civil War going on, literally, you know, while the Roman invasion was underway. And Josephus characterized the Civil War as being as bad or worse than the Roman invasion. I'm going to read a few passages from Josephus. Okay, this is this is the works of Volume 1. There's 4 volumes of the works of Josephus. This volume is almost entirely taken up by the wars of the Jews. Right, and that's where all the quotes are coming from that particular book of Josephus. So, if you're interested, this is book 4, chapter 3, section 2. So, these harangues of John's, not John the Apostle that we've been studying, but John of Gisela, who was a leader of the Zealots, corrupted a great part of the young men and puffed them up for war. But as to the most prudent part, and those in years, there was not a man of them but foresaw what was coming and made lamentation on that account, as if the city was already undone, and in this confusion were the people. But then it must be observed that the multitude that came out of the country were at discord before the Jerusalem sedition began. For Titus went from Gisala to Caesarea, Vespasian, and when he had put garrisons into them, he came back with a great number of the people who were come over to him, upon his giving them his right hand for their preservation. There were, besides, disorders and civil wars in every city, and all those that were quiet from the Romans turned their hands one against another. There was also a bitter contest between those who were fond of war and those that were desirous of peace. At the first, this quarrelsome temper caught hold of private families who could not agree among themselves. After which, those people that were the dearest to one another break through all restraints with regard to each other, and everyone associated with those of his own opinion, and began already to stand in opposition one to another, so that seditions arose everywhere, while those that were for innovations and were desirous of war by their youth and boldness were too hard for the aged and the prudent men. And in the first place, all the people of every place betook themselves to rapine, after which they got together in bodies in order to rob the people of the country. Insomuch that for barbarity and iniquity, those of the same nation did no way differ from the Romans. Nay, it seemed to be a much lighter thing to be ruined by the Romans than by themselves. So, doesn't have too much details. But Josephus' conclusion is that, you know, it was as bad or worse. The civil wars were as bad or worse than the Roman invasion. Okay, and then from Book 5, Chapter 1, Verse 5, we'll get a little idea of how much worse it was. And now, as the city was engaged in a war on all sides, from these treacherous crowds of wicked men, the people of the city between them were like a great body torn in pieces. The aged men and the women were in such distress by their internal calamities that they wished for the Romans and earnestly hoped for an external war in order to their delivery from their domestic miseries. The citizens themselves were under a terrible consternation and fear, nor had they any opportunity of taking counsel and of changing their conduct. Nor were there any hopes of coming to an agreement with their enemies, nor could such as had a mind flee away. For guards were set at all the places, and the heads of the robbers, although they were seditious one against another in other respects, yet they did agree in killing those that were for peace with the Romans, or were suspected of an inclination to desert to them as their common enemies. They agreed in nothing but this, to kill those that were innocent. The noise also of those that were fighting was incessant, both by day and by night, but the lamentation of those that mourned exceeded the other. Nor was there ever any occasion for them to leave off their lamentations, because their calamities came perpetually one upon another, although the deep consternation they were in prevented their outward wailing. But, being constrained by their fear to conceal their inward passions, they were inwardly tormented without daring to open their lips in groans. Nor was any regard paid to those that were still alive by their relations, nor was there any care taken of burial for those that were dead. The occasion of both, which was this, that everyone despaired of himself, for those that were not among the seditious had no great desires of anything, as expecting for certain that they should very soon be destroyed. But for the seditious themselves, they fought against each other, while they trod upon the dead bodies as they lay heaped one upon another, and taking up a mad rage from those dead bodies that were under their feet became the fiercer thereupon. They, moreover, were still inventing somewhat or other that was pernicious against themselves. And when they resolved upon anything, they executed it without mercy and omitted no method of torment or of barbarity. So this was all before the Romans invaded. This was a description of the Jewish civil war. So it was quite horrific. I know this description of the writer is having taken peace from the earth. Right. I don't know. To me, it seems sort of an apt description of this.
When did this happen to?
This was in the late 60s. Mm-hmm. So, not the 1960s. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, the third seal, the black horse, right, represented, and the rider represented catastrophic scarcity and famine. Right, now, the famine was quite horrific. And there's quite a bit here, probably too much to read, but let me read a few excerpts. Right, so this is carrying on. The madness of the sedition did also increase together with their famine. Both those miseries were every day inflamed more and more. For there was no corn which anywhere appeared publicly, but the robbers came running into and searched men's private houses. And if they found any, they tormented them because they had denied they had any. And if they found none, they tormented them worse because they supposed they had more carefully concealed it. The indication they made use of whether they had it or not was taken from the bodies of these miserable wretches, which if they were in good case, they supposed they were in no want of at all of food. But if they were wasted away, they walked off without searching any further. Okay, so there's other descriptions of them rushing in, and you know, people trying to bake a little food or eat a little food in the inside of their house. You know, and if they cooked anything, they snatched the bread out of the fire half-baked and ate it very hastily. He describes the most miserable condition, in so much that children pulled the very morsels that their fathers were eating out of their very mouths, and what was still more to be pitied, so did the mothers do as to their infants. And when those that were most dear were perishing under their hands, they were not ashamed to take from them the very last drops that might preserve their lives. And while they ate after this manner, yet they were not concealed in so doing, but the seditious everywhere came upon them immediately and snatched away from them what they had gotten for others. For when they saw any house shut up, this was to them a signal that the people within had gotten some food, whereupon they broke open the doors and ran in and took pieces of what they were eating. Almost up out of their very throats, and this by force, the old men who held their food fast were beaten. If the women hid what they had within their hands, their hair was torn for so doing. Nor was there any commiseration shown either to the aged or to infants, but they lifted up children from the ground as they hung upon the morsels they had gotten, and shook them down upon the floor. But still they were more barbarously cruel to those that had prevented their coming in, and had actually swallowed down what they were going to seize upon, as if they had been unjustly defrauded of their right. They also invented terrible methods of torment to discover where any food was, and they were these. Oh, and I'm going to stop there because it's quite... I don't want to get... Well, maybe if you lose your appetite for lunch, I could get more dessert, but... So, anyways, he goes in with some detail, some of the tortures. Okay, the fourth seal, the pale horse. Interestingly, the Greek word there is chloros, which is usually translated green. But whether the horse is a sickly green or a sickly pale, it brings death to a quarter of the land. You might, if you have time, I think we'll probably not dwell on this, but you might compare these seals to the Olivet Discourse. So for Matthew 24, Mark 13, Luke 21. Just Mark 13:8. For nation will rise against nation and kingdom against kingdom, and there will be earthquakes in various places, and there will be famines and troubles. These are the beginnings of sorrows. And you could spend a lot of time comparing the verses, but they, I think what Christ predicts in the Olivet Discourse and warns the people about, that's what's happening here, is what I'm asserting. And obviously some other people will have different interpretations. Okay, let's continue with the fifth and sixth seals, Revelation 6, 9. Starting there, when he opened the fifth seal, I saw under the altar the souls of those who had been slain for the word of God and for the testimony which they held. And they cried with a loud voice, saying, "How long, O Lord, holy and true, until you judge and avenge our blood on those who dwell on the earth?" Then a white robe was given to each of them, and it was said to them that they should rest a little while longer, until both the number of their fellow servants and their brethren, who would be killed as they were, was completed. I looked when he opened the sixth seal, and behold, there was a great earthquake, and the sun became black as sackcloth of hair, and the moon became like blood. And the stars of heaven fell to the earth, as a fig tree drops its late figs when it is shaken by a mighty wind. Then the sky receded as a scroll when it is rolled up, and every mountain and island was moved out of its place. And the kings of the earth, the great men, the rich men, the commanders, the mighty men, every slave and every free man, hid themselves in the caves and in the rocks of the mountains, and said to the mountains and rocks, "Fall on us and hide us from the face of him who sits on the throne and from the wrath of the Lamb. For the great day of his wrath is come, and who is able to stand?" Okay, so the fifth seal is open. We turn our attention to the martyrs. How long will it be before they are avenged? they are told to rest a little while longer until, well, Jerusalem is destroyed and they're avenged. The sixth seal is opened. We have a great earthquake, the sun becoming black, the moon like blood, stars of heaven falling to earth, and the sky receding as a scroll. Now, what could this mean? Right? Well, it could be certainly a literal interpretation. We could certainly have a great earthquake. We can even have explanations for the sun becoming black and the moon being like blood. Supposedly, in that decade, there were quite a bit of volcanic activity, some of which could blot out the sun or make the moon appear red. A little more trouble with stars of heaven falling to earth, literally, and the sky receding as a scroll. But if we look back to the Old Testament, we consider, say, Isaiah 13, a prophecy of the destruction of the original Babylon. So I'm going to read 9, 10, 13, and then skip to 19. So 9 and 10, behold, the day of the Lord comes, cruel with both wrath and fierce anger, to lay the land desolate, and he will destroy its sinners from it. For the stars of heaven and their constellations will not give their light, the sun will be darkened in its going forth, and the moon will not cause its light to shine. And 13, therefore I will shake the heavens, and the earth will move out of her place in the wrath of the Lord of hosts, and in the day of his fierce anger. Verse 19, in Babylon the glory of kingdoms, the beauty of the Chaldeans' pride, will be as when God overthrew Sodom and Gomorrah. Okay, this is just prophecy of the destruction of the original Babylon. It's had, by the time of Revelation, had long since taken place. But we see this imagery of the stars of heaven not giving their light, sun being darkened, and so on. I'll say this kind of language is often used when a country is overthrown, when its government's destroyed. Okay, Ezekiel 32 is a prophecy against Egypt. Verses 6 through 8 are, I will also water the land with the flow of your blood, even to the mountains, and the riverbeds will be full of you. When I put out your light, I will cover the heavens and make its stars dark. I will cover the sun with a cloud, and the moon shall not give her light. All the brights of light of the heavens I will make dark over you and bring darkness upon your land, says the Lord God. Or Isaiah 34, a prophecy against Edom. Starting with verse 1, O come near, you nations, to hear, and heed, you people. Let the earth hear and all that is in it, the world and all things that come forth from it. For the indignation of the Lord is against all nations, and his fury against all their armies. He has utterly destroyed them. He has given them over to the slaughter. Also their slain shall be thrown out, their stench shall rise from their corpses, and the mountains shall be melted with their blood. All the host of heaven shall